Now we're going to move on to the adaptive body defenses. This is going to be the more specific reaction to specific invaders. There are two basic types that we're going to talk about, humoral immunity and cellular immunity. For humoral immunity, the word humor is the old word referring to fluids in the body, and humoral immunity is the having antibodies present in those fluids. For cellular immunity, it's also known in some books as cell-mediated immunity. And that's going to be when the lymphocytes themselves respond to the invader. Now, in order to understand specific immunity, you have to understand what antigen is. On the surface of every cell, there's markers that are identification tags for what that cell is. And it's important for your immune system to recognize all of your markers so it doesn't accidentally attack you. First bullet says substance presence on the surface of a foreign invader that can trigger an immune response. So antigen is an identifiable piece on the surface. To the immune system, it is recognized as non-self. And these markers can be made of proteins, carbohydrates, or even some modified lipids can be tags on the surface of an invader that makes it recognizable to the immune system. And of course, our immune system has to learn all of our own proteins to recognize itself. Again, you don't want to attack your own tissues, although we know that sometimes that does happen by accident. Now, we've been talking about invaders like viruses and bacteria. It's easy to see why we would have defense against those. But even among our own species, we have self-antigens that identify our unique tissues compared to other people's unique tissues. It's one of the things that makes transplants so tricky. When you take another kidney and put it in someone else, their immune system, even though it's a human kidney, they see it as a foreign invader to some extent. And so one of the medical tricks that they have to do is to try to keep the immune system from attacking it. Another weird thing about antigen is sometimes there's some small molecules that if they were in your body by themselves, your body won't even recognize them. But if they embed on our own cells and become part of our cell surface, they trigger an immune response. And these small molecules are called haptens. And they're one of the things we'll be talking about that cause allergic reactions. Next, we're going to discuss the cells of the adaptive defense system. The star of the show are the lymphocytes. If you remember when we looked at blood, these were the ones that stained up. They looked like the whole thing was a nucleus almost. They were smaller than the other white blood cells, but they were the second most common in blood as we identified them. Like all the other blood cells, they do originate from red bone marrow. And when they're released from red bone marrow, they're all essentially the same. They're going to become either a B cell or a T cell, and that depends on where they become immunocompetent. And the key word there is where, because they're literally, for instance, T cell is called that because their education takes place in the thymus. So after they're released from the bone marrow, they're in the bloodstream, they move through the thymus, and in the thymus, that's where they are educated into self, learning to recognize your antigen, your self-antigen. They divide rapidly in the thymus, but only the ones that are good at recognizing foreign substances survive. Those that stick to self-antigens are destroyed. It's kind of a really tough school. I don't know if I'd want to go there, but only the ones that succeed, that are A-plus students, get to be released and move out into the blood and go on patrol. The other ones are the B cells, and they develop their immunocompetence in the bone marrow itself. Now, it's important to remember that all lymphocytes are very specific. They can only stick to one foreign invader. Our genes determine what will be recognized as foreigns. It's an interesting and weird thought, but every antigen we will ever fight is made for us, or by us, I should say, before it's ever encountered. And many of the programmed lymphocytes that we have in our blood will never be used. They'll never encounter the antigen that they were made for. At some point, all lymphocytes migrate to the lymph nodes and spleen. It's kind of an interesting article I was reading when I was prepping up for this, talking about where different white blood cells spend the percentages of their time. And they don't just stay in one place, they move around from place to place. But all lymphocytes are going to spend the majority of their time in lymph nodes and spleen. The other cells of this specific immunity are the macrophages, and they arise from monocytes. And you should remember when we looked at our blood, we found monocytes. They were the ones that were largest of the white blood cells, and they had that big dopey kind of U-shaped nucleus that was a little lighter stained than the others. And what they do is that when they encounter a pathogen, they devour it, rip it to pieces, and they literally, when they bump into T cells, they present pieces of the antigen to the T cell. They'll hold it up and say, hey, look what I found. They also secrete cytokines, which help initiate immune response. When they're running into trouble, they release chemicals that stimulate the immune reaction. Now, macrophages were hard to find in the blood, but the majority of them are in lymphoid organs. So everything passes through lymphoid organs at some point. So they're in there just looking for foreign invaders to pass through. The next section of our notes is about humoral immune response. So immunocompetent B lymphocytes become mature B cells after they've contacted the antigen they are made for. And this could be years after they were made. They've just been wandering around looking for it. And when they finally bump into that antigen, they become mature B cells. Once it does contact with a foreign invader, the first thing it does is starts multiplying rapidly, making an army of itself. So you don't want just a bunch of B cells. You want B cells that are triggered by that particular antigen. So you're saving energy. This reaction is called the primary humoral response because it's obviously it's the first time it's bumped into it. And for the clone descendants of that one that contacted the antigen, most of them become plasma cells. And the plasma cells are going to be the ones that are going to release antibodies at a ridiculously fast rate. A lot of times I've freaked out about the numbers in this class, you know, just like how much oxygen is carried by your blood and stuff like that. But these plasma cells, once they're up and running, they can release 2,000 antibodies per second. Now try to imagine millions and millions of these releasing 2,000 per second. It makes a number you can't even fathom being released into your blood. And when you are under attack, your antibody levels will peak at about 10 days. That rapid production continues for about 4 or 5 days, then the plasma cell dies. Now that has other descendants, so they're all doing this. But because they're putting so much energy into antibody production, they exhaust their resources in a pretty short amount of time. Now, some of those descendants from the original one that contacted don't become plasma cells, which are the antibody makers. They become memory cells. Since you've had this infection, the memory cells hang around, and these are very long-living cells. A few years back, when I was reading about this, I read an article saying that they were still finding memory cells from the 1918 flu pandemic or epidemic that tore through our country. So these can go on for decades. Their benefit is that in a second exposure, because these memory cells are always around, instead of taking 10 days for antibody peak, you reach it in 2 to 3 days. So this explains why if you were exposed to chickenpox as a kid and you got sick from it, now that you have an up and running system of defense against chickenpox, if you were exposed to it a second time, the chickenpox just thought it was going to start growing again. But in a couple of days, you had a full response to it. So you beat it back before you ever even knew you were exposed to it. So you should, if everything's running right, get sick from something like that only one time. Now we're going to talk about active and passive humoral immunity. Active immunity is going to be what happens when the B cells are exposed to a foreign invader and you make the appropriate response to it. There's two different forms of that. You can have naturally acquired, which is when you get sick. You're exposed to a germ, the germ grows in you, and you mount a response against it. There's also artificially acquired, which is where you get a vaccination shot. The concept behind that is you give a piece of the antigen to the immune system on purpose that can't proliferate, but your body responds to it and builds an immune reaction to it. So for active immunity, there was two basic methods. The active one, or excuse me, naturally acquired is when you get sick, and artificially acquired is when you get a vaccination shot. Now we're going to talk about passive immunity, which is where you get antibodies that you didn't make. There's a naturally acquired form of that, which is where you get them from antibodies that cross the placenta during development, or from mother's milk, from feeding infants. In both cases, you get antibodies that you don't make. They can do the protecting they need to, but you don't get any immune memory from it because you didn't make them. The last example is artificially acquired passive immunity. And you would get this if you were really sick or if you had some certain toxins put in your blood. These are when you get someone else's or artificially acquired antibodies. So your body doesn't make them. You just get a shot full of antibodies. They go to work immediately and save you from whatever terrible illness you have. Next, we're going to talk about cell-mediated immune response. Like B cells, T cells are activated to cloning by contact with a foreign antibody, or excuse me, foreign antigen, but not just the antigen by itself. T cells can't bond with the antigen itself. It must be presented by a macrophage. So they're going to have to bump into a macrophage that has defeated this. And they do a really weird thing, and some books describe it like a double handshake. The macrophage presents a piece of the antigen in one hand and a familiar piece of the macrophage with the other. And it kind of confirms to the T cell that this thing has been encountered. It's an odd thing. Other types of T cells, you have killer Ts. They specialize in killing virus-infected, cancer, or foreign graft cells. And they bind to the foreign cell and they inject perforins, which punch holes in the cell membrane, and then granzymes, which dissolve the foreign cell. Helper T cells, they're kind of like the foreman of the job. They oversee the immune system. They can recruit others and stimulate cloning, and they release chemicals that go throughout the whole body to stimulate the immune reaction. And then regulatory cells, T cells, sometimes they're called suppressor Ts. And when the threat has been removed, something has to shut the system down so you don't keep pouring all this energy into an enemy that's been defeated. So they control the end of the battle, basically. Now, in your notes packet, I gave you a matching section that doesn't apply to our book, so we're going to skip past that part. But on the bottom of the last page, I do want you to describe the following in detail: the allergy, immediate hypersensitivity, anaphylactic shock, and delayed hypersensitivity. You can use the book or the internet to find definitions of each of those.